Hi, this is Doug Lynn bringing you Quiet Speculation's Lightning Round. I'm joined today by Adam Yurchik and James Chillicott, your Lightning Round co-hosts and also financial masters. We are here to talk, speaking of masters, about some pretty awesome stuff, including Modern Masters 2. So we'll be devoting a lot of the show to that today. And we'll also be diving into some big moves in Magic Online that James is going to bring to us. And then Adam is going to be presenting about the world's results and what it means for you, your pocketbook, and your deck box. So first of all, I wanted to talk about Modern Masters 2, or Modern Masters 2015. This was announced this past weekend, and it is going to be following the mold of Modern Masters, which means it's going to be having, I think, 249 cards. It's going to be also set up as a draft format, which means that there will be sub-themes for people to draft, and that cards will be put in it that may not be financially good, but are interesting in draft. And the best example of this are the Kamigawa Dragons from the last set, which people were miserable to open about opening, but had they were mythics, they were interesting enough in draft. Adam, you drafted a lot of Modern Masters, is that right?
I wouldn't say I drafted a lot, but I drafted a decent amount of times.
So, tell me about the sub-themes in that and what we might see this time.
So, Modern Masters 2 is going back all the way to Mirrodin, just like Modern Masters 1.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going back to 8th edition.
Yeah, 8th edition and Mirrodin. So, it's gonna encapsulate all of Modern Masters 1 and then two new sets. So I have a feeling that we're going to see some similarities. We're going to see an artifact sub-theme that's going to be enabled by affinity cards and Metalcraft. And we're going to see two-color decks. They announced that they want solid two-color decks. So from there, they could go back and revisit decks like Blue-Red Splice or Blue-Black Fairies.
You know, bring up Splice. Two of the cards spoiled, I think that they are very indicative. One of them is Etched Champion. And Etched Champion, 2/2 Metalcraft. It will be interesting to see Mirrodin and Scars of Mirrodin potentially side by side. People might see what looks like modern affinity decks with that. And you also brought up Splice. The other card that was spoiled was Emrakul. And Emrakul, they might put facilitators in. People are talking about Through the Breach, and I had brought up when we were chatting before that card has Splice on it. And if they put something like Through the Breach in, they don't like to put in Orphan mechanics, and we might be seeing a whole lot more Splice cards because of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time since anybody got to fool around with Splice in a limited format. You know, Champions was 10 years ago. So, you know, for a lot of players that came in through the big ramp up in the last 5 years, we're probably going to be getting, you know, this is a brand new experience for them. So I think that's very likely. And just so, you know, we should probably recap from the top what archetypes were available in Modern Masters 1. We had Dredge, Storm, Affinity, Arcane, and then a lot of tribal mechanics from fairies, rebels, goblins, ballads, and giants. Mm-hmm. And then there was a sunburst sub-theme as well.
Yes.
So what they have indicated to us is that there are going to be, I mean, just simply looking back at Modern Masters 1, there are going to be a whole lot of sub-themes to be able to justify a whole bunch of these different things, and that we should really anticipate a pretty wide open, interestingly developed set.
Yeah, I mean, Wizards has been hitting it out of the park the last couple of years with really great limited formats. I think Cons has been well received. Conspiracy didn't sell that well in the long run, but I think, you know, everybody I talked to who played it enjoyed it. You know, it was more the social politics and collusion that was possible gave some people some, you know, bad feels, but overall the actual play of that set was quite good.
And I think one of the downsides of Conspiracy was that it was a multiplayer format that people only played one game. So if you ended up mana screwed, you just didn't even get to participate.
Exactly.
It's interesting that Modern Masters 2015, or Modern Masters 2, I'll never get the real name of it right, is going to be a 24 pack box, which is the magic number for drafting. So my feeling with $10 a pack booster price is the idea being you get together with your friends, you pool some money on a Friday night, and this is tailor-made for drafting. They even back in Modern Masters 1 said, we're not going to be printing cards that just for their money, we're going to be printing ones that fit into the set. And I think, James, you brought this up in the past, right? Particularly in regard to cards like Doubling Season.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mix. This is a set that, especially for Magic Online purposes, needs to be great for draft. I suspect that real-life drafting of Modern Masters 2015 edition, or Modern Masters 2, as it probably should have been called, is much more likely. The bulk of that drafting is probably going to take place at the three international GPs that happen at the end of May, where you're going to have 10,000 people open something like, you know, 120,000 packs in the course of a weekend. But after that, the price of these boxes is going to be so high that I actually suspect, you know, there'll be a little bit of interest at the LGS level for drafting it for, you know, 2 to 4 weeks. And then I suspect it to fall off, both because the LGSs are going to have limited product left, because the cost of that draft is going to be so high versus, say, Magic 2016 when it comes out, and because so many of these boxes are going to be getting flipped and absorbed for long-term spec holds or collections, that I really don't see it as a set that's going to be drafted for more than a huge burst at the start of its release.
Absolutely. I think this is going to be one of those sets that people also sock away and put in their closet.
Another point, that's a good point, James. Also, I think that we're going to see a lot of markup on these packs, just like Modern Masters 1. So it's not necessarily going to be $30 to draft. It might be $40, $50 to draft once a couple weeks and months go by. And as time goes on, it's just going to be drafted less and less because it's inaccessible.
Exactly. And there are some interesting dynamics to consider here in terms of whether, you know, our listeners should be running out to try to build the relationships with their LGS to get a hold of these boxes. A few things to consider. One is that the MSRP of the packs themselves has been slid up from $7.99 to $9.99. And because of that, you know, why that happened isn't because it's costing Wizards anymore. It's because Wizards saw how much they were going for in the secondary market and decided to recoup some of that profit for themselves. Now, what that will probably mean around the period of release is that there's going to be a lot of price memory in terms of what Modern Masters 1 boxes were selling for. And almost no matter how much of this they're eventually going to publish, it's going to feel like it's in limited quantity at first. There was a lot of discussion I had with around the release of Khans of Tarkir, which, you know, is on track to be perhaps the most open set of all time, that they actually had a lot of trouble getting enough boxes up front. And so I suspect that Wizards is doing that deliberately with sets that they plan to have opened a lot. They're creating a false lowered supply. You know, it's the kind of same kind of thing Apple does with its phones. So that the hype is that much higher, so that the demand is that much more aflame as people run around trying to track down these boxes. But they have also confirmed that Modern Masters 2015 edition is going to be not as limited as Modern Masters 1. So they will probably play that by ear, going back to the presses as necessary, depending on what the feedback is like from the community and from sales figures that they're getting from distributors and so forth. I suspect that it is still an LGS only product, so I don't think you're going to be able to pick these up at Walmart or Target. If that turns out to not be the case and it is a broad release at retail, then I think all bets are off in terms of what happens with those box prices, because you know, if Walmart will set the MSRP or to somewhere in the $9.99 to $12.99 range, and that will act as an anchor against the LGS attempting to raise prices. Now, one of the other factors to consider is that this is Modern Masters 1 was only printed in English, and primarily, though it was distributed overseas, the distribution was much less. Now we've seen that they've confirmed that we're not getting it in all of the languages that a set like Cons would be printed in, you know, that's something like 12 or whatever it is now, but we are getting it in Japanese, in Chinese, and in English. Now, generally, Chinese cards are considered to be less valuable in the West, in North America and Europe, than English cards, so that's probably not a huge factor. But when we consider that some of the reprints, something like an Emrakul, may have alternative art in the Mythic slot, that means you might be getting an alt art Mythic Japanese foil Emrakul, which certainly opens up the possibility of some pretty stratospheric prices.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the other things that had depressed, or had rather had elevated the price of the first Modern Masters release, was that people realized the EV on the box was so good. They snapped them up, drove up the price of it, and people were saying, you know, I'm going to buy four or six boxes, put them in the closet, forget about them. You know, a point to make later about the value of those boxes now versus what they were. But I think that with Wizards saying that there's going to be an expanded release right now for this next set, and that we're going to have three Grand Prix for it, say that it's a little less of a sure bet to stash these things in a closet. And I think that they want to keep the price maybe at the $30 instead of it spiraling out of control.
I mean, based on what I know so far, I think my strategy, and it may change later as we learn more about the set and see what's actually in it, is to be at one of those Grand Prix. I have every intention of being in Vegas, snapping up as much undervalued, over-opened rares and mythics as possible that weekend. Staying away from boxes until the price kind of settles out, because I don't think we're going to be... It's entirely possible that boxes will sell on eBay that first week in the 300 to 400 range in anticipation of it being a repeat of the last time. But I suspect that the ability to get access to foreign product, the Chinese boxes, may be more widely available than the English, and the demand for Japanese over English shakes that up a little bit, and I want to see how it shakes out over the course of 4 to 6 weeks before I start committing to holding as many boxes as I did with Modern Masters 1. Because with that said, I picked up 10 boxes in the 215, 220 range, and later sold them very easily overseas at 400 inside 12 months. So the profit was definitely there.
Yeah, and that was the height of those boxes too, and they were worth quite a lot of money. The expected value of Modern Masters has dropped since then. In fact, I have a list. We're going to be talking about what to sell in the set. There is a widespread myth that Modern Masters drove up the prices on cards that were printed in it. In fact, there are only four rares and four mythics that rose in price in the past year since Modern Masters came out and had some time to hit. The rares are Sword of Fire and Ice, Vendilion Click, and then obviously Dark Confidant and Tarmogoyf. And the rares were Blood Moon, Slaughter Pact, Aether Vial, and Cryptic Command. Now, all those cards got a lot of play in Modern, and Slaughter Pact is one of those that I look at that didn't see any play and then started showing up on Maliripod sideboards. And all of these cards, they didn't go up because they were reprinted. They went up because people wanted to play with them more, because the Modern was growing. It was a PTQ format. So by and large, most of the cards in that set dropped the value on that, on the pre-existing cards, by a third or more. So
yeah, I think
go ahead.
The key point there is that casual cards get killed by reprints, because a casual card spiking is not about massive demand, it's about low supply. So whereas a standard card can spike, even a card from a standard set like say Theros last year, a card like Thassa or Master of Waves that was opened in massive quantities was still capable of doubling over the course of a weekend if it was apparent that it was dominating the format and a ton of people were going to be switching to the deck to make sure they won matches. In the current standard, we have a much more open field this year, and so we're not seeing cards spike as hard in paper. It's a little different online, but in paper, most of the cards have been depressed on a downward slide for a while, and they're kind of staying there. Likewise, with Modern Masters 1, as you said, the only cards that were either protected or rose were ones that were generally a major factor in the metagame. A lot of those cards you mentioned also have play in Legacy. I mean, Tarmogoyf and Dark Confident and Blood Moon are all very relevant Legacy cards now, and have been for some time. And because of that, and also the fact that they had alternative art, all of which contributed to them being able to hold their positions.
Absolutely.
Also, being a mythic in Modern Masters 1 is kind of like being a special card in Magic Online, in the sense that those mythics were much, much more rare than, say, a mythic in a fall set like Concept Arcane. And so I think that also strongly contributed to keeping those cards afloat. If we had a card like Tarmogoyf get reprinted yet again in Modern Masters 2015 edition, I'm not sure that it can hold that price. My suspicion is that it cannot, because I think that, you know, nobody knows whether we're getting twice as much of MM2 as we did of MM1, or three times, or five times, or 10 times. And without that number, we can't say for sure.
You know, You had brought up casual cards and how they have a slow gain. And we pulled up Doubling Season here. Doubling Season was one of those cards that was a $40 to $50 rare, and then was reprinted as a rare, now sells for $20, buy list for $14. So, you know, they don't experience the spikes like you were talking about, and they certainly don't hold their value. You get killed on the casual reprints.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're seeing the same thing with the Commander products every late fall now. It's being in deep on casual cards that have already had a spike, that are, you know, 5 or 10 years old or 15 years old, and just have recently found a home in the casual community, largely due to EDH and Commander play, are not a place I want to be if I suspect they're going to show up in a supplementary product, whether it's Commander products or Modern Masters.
Certainly, and you know, the reprints in Modern Masters, they will kill the value of a lot of the cards. One of the things we're going to talk about on this cast is what to sell. The listeners, people listening right now, we will have a link to the list of the cards in the show notes that we're talking about today. You'll be able to peruse the same visual buy list you're seeing here, the buy and sell prices. There is a lot that could potentially be reprinted in Modern Masters 2015. This spans all the way from 8th edition all the way up to Scars of Mirrodin. So there's a lot that could potentially be reprinted and lose a lot of value. Adam, tell me what you think your top picks are for cards that you would just get rid of right now.
I think that Mox Opal is the most surefire card. We know of two cards in Modern Masters 2. We know of Emrakul, the Aeon's Torn, and we know Etch Champion, based on they're using that card as the picture for the set. And in their official release, they used Etch Champion as the background. So Etch Champion has Metalcraft, Mox Opal has Metalcraft. It's a very expensive modern card that's played in one of the most popular decks. That's sort of the baseline of the format. It seems like the quintessential card that they do not want to be expensive. It's a card they want to be in everyone's hands if they want it. So it also is fine in the limited format. If you open it as a mythic, great, it might be all right in your deck. It's certainly not overpowered if you do happen to get one, and being mythic helps eliminate that risk for them. So I think Mox Opal is a slam dunk card for Modern Masters 2, and it's not something I'd want to hold unless I need to play with it.
You know, yeah. I look at a card like Etch Champion and Mox Opal, and they're cards that don't require the affinity shell that we saw before. They could put, for example, Memnite in there and easily support a Metalcraft theme. James, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, part of Adam's point is that that deck, Affinity, minus Mox Opals, is a very affordable deck. And part of keeping Modern wide open as a populist format that is easily accessible and can attract a lot more players than something like Legacy, where they've got to get into dual lands for the most part, is, you know, knocking the price down on Mox Opal under the $20 line, which starts to make that deck really, really affordable. There's some cards that are on my radar, things like Goblin Guide, almost certain to be reprinted in the rare slot, reinforced by its recent explosion, If people haven't already got out on that card, or whether you've got a couple playsets and you're not playing Burn or Goblins, I'd get way out on Goblin Guide. That card has to come down under $10 again.
It has a spread of only 27%. Goblin Guide is already feeling the heat, no pun intended, because Monastery Swift Spear does a very good Goblin Guide impression in the Burn deck.
In a lot of cases, they're played alongside, so I'm not sure how much they cannibalize each other rather than reinforce. But I still don't want to be holding, you know, $20 and $30 rares that are about to be reprinted. That just doesn't make sense.
And then there are not only the $20 and $30 rares, but there are the $8 and $12 uncommons. Serum Visions comes to mind. It is currently a $7 card. Inquisition of Kozilek is up there. I know even Mind Sensors are a banner card for ridiculously overpriced uncommon. And we were thinking about cards like Inquisition and Serum Visions, easy to slot into a draft format. Even Mind Sensor, the shuffle effect doesn't really do a whole lot in a draft format, but it is interesting. And if we are thinking that we might see Zendikar fetch lands here, the Aven Mindsetzer can certainly shut it off, and there's a little bit of intra-set interaction there.
I can see Jataxian Probe getting new art and still getting knocked down to 25 cents from its current $3 mark. Mm-hmm. That's not a card I want to be holding in bulk. Certainly cards like Forked Bolt almost certainly to reappear and be knocked down to its minimal price, natural price. We're going to see things like Splinter Twin almost certainly get reprinted. The World Wake Man lands would make perfect sense as a cycle of lands in this set, especially if they're going two-color decks. They slot in really nicely. Things like Thrun the Last Troll, Tezzeret Agent of Bolas, Ink Moth Nexus. We mentioned Phyrexian Obliterator earlier. That's almost certainly coming back. Elish Norn is probably going to make a showing in the Mythic slot, and it's possible Karn Liberated is there right with her.
We had discussed the idea on the forums also that the Praetors would maybe replace the Dragons, or we would see a set of big bomb Mythics in each color. I like the Praetors. They require multiple colors of one mana. They certainly feel like you get what you pay for when you play them. They're splashy.
Seems like a great fit.
That comes to mind here is like the test is like, is this cool in cube? Is this really neat in a draft format in cube? And I think that cards like Elish Norn really fit into that.
Yeah, I mean, another card that's on my mind is Birthing Pod. I'm pretty deep on those. I have 20 or 30 copies. That may end up looking like a mistake. But there's going to be an interesting moment here where if Treasure Cruise gets banned, then decks like Birthing Pod get better immediately. And we have, 3 to 5 months where Pod decks could see a resurgence, Pod could rise a bit, but if it's reprinted, then it crashes for sure.
Definitely. We have a lot of other sell calls. It spans so much that it's kind of an embarrassment of riches here. a whole lot of stuff could be losing value here. And I think one of the big questions is what lands we're going to see. You pick your lands and you might see Celestial Colonnade and that cycle being reprinted. You might see the filter lands. There are 10 of them, which would make an easy insertion for color fixing in a set where you want to encourage strong two-color decks, although they all acknowledge that they're way too good to just run two colors with. excuse me, those are cards that I'm feeling a little bit wary about. I'm also feeling wary about Infect coming back. That was a cool thing in Scars of Mirrodin draft, and I would not be surprised if they revisited that. It plays well with the idea of putting in equipment and putting in all sorts of other interesting things in it. You had brought up Splinter Twin also. Splinter Twins is a good one to talk about. I think that is a very strong potential for a sell right now. Splinter Twin is a good deck in Modern. It will continue to be a good deck in Modern. It is unlikely to see more good cards in it printed, and I would have said that before Cons and then Dig Through Time was printed. So I don't know how reliable I can be on that. But Splinter Twin, if you're not playing them, I think Splinter Twin assuredly is going to be reprinted for the reason that it is really fun in a limited environment to just slap it on a creature and start getting value. So that those are some of our sells. We have a huge list pulled up here on Trader Tools. If you're listening or if you're going back to this, you'll find that we have the big list posted. It will be in the show notes. And you'll be able to see all of our calls. The easy way to tell is if they're before scars and including scars, we think you should sell them. What kind of lands do you guys think we're going to see in this set? Are we going to see the reprint of Zendikar fetch lands here?
I was feeling pretty certain that we were, one way or another, by summer, we were going to see those fetch lands. Now I'm not certain at all. Their philosophy on it is very murky. There's been a lot of indefinite or conflicting statements over the last year. It's not clear to anybody that they are necessary anymore. People, you know, from all the way back to Legacy, the appearance of the KTK fetchlands seems to have solved some accessibility issues for fetchlands in general. There are a couple of decks that would much prefer to have, for instance, Misty Rainforest reprinted, but multiple formats as a whole do not require that reprinting. Now, that being said, they didn't know that when they committed the final list, you know, sometime last year. So it's possible they're in Modern Masters 2015 edition. It's possible they're in one of these spring sets coming up, although I think I'm leaning towards that being unlikely. More and more, I am thinking that the most likely appearance is that next fall or the fall after, we're going back to Zendikar. Because that has been heavily hinted at, that that's a place we're returning to relatively soon. And if we are returning, then that's the perfect place to print.
You know, one card that I can think of that is an assured sell, speaking of returning to planes or going to alternate time realities, is Damnation. Damnation is a card that Gavin Very said it is not in From the Vault Annihilation, and there is a good reason for that, and you will see it soon. Damnation is a card that is a little bit too strong to be printing in Standard. Blue-Black Control does not need that level of board sweep. I know we've been talking about, ever since Gavin said that, we've been saying sell Damnation, especially if you have, I think if you have the original printing of Damnation, that's the one, you definitely get rid of that. I don't think you get rid of the Texas foil. But the original, the art is so cool, and they're going to be bringing it back at some point. Damnation is another card that I want to hit a point on, is that many of these cards, for example, if you maintain a cube or you have EDH lists, these are cards that you may be thinking like, oh, you know, they'll come down somewhat in price. Who cares? These are cards where you may be looking at a 100-card commander deck or a cube, and you may be losing $200 to $300 if you don't sell them before they get reprinted. And if you sell them and they don't get reprinted, it is a marginal cost to rebuy. But you save, you can get huge discounts if you sell your Damnation now for $35, let's say, and then you rebuy it when it hits 15 or 20. This is a card, it's like Urborg Trim of Yawgmoth. We had inklings that it was going to get reprinted. It comes back, it spikes the price down, or plummets it. And the people who were disciplined enough to sell and then rebuy got a little bit of free money, and they only had to be out of their cards for a few months, or a few weeks even. So that's what I would suggest to people listening. You may be thinking that this doesn't matter if the prices are going down because you already have it. But you will stand losing $100, $200, $300 on these cards if they sit in a bin and you don't sell them and rebuy.
Yeah, Dog, I actually sold two Damnation this morning on TCG Player.
Wise man. What brought you to sell them this morning?
Honestly, I've had them and I've been meaning to sell them for a while. And then with the Modern Masters announcement, I figured, you know, now's the time. It's not going to get any better. So I put them up on TCG as the lowest price and sold them pretty quickly. Got about $30 for them and I'm happy with it.
That sounds good. And listeners, you can do that too. We recommend it. Sometimes making money means just not losing money. One thing we want to talk about, though, is making money, and we are going to shift over to talking about what you should buy. And what is interesting is that, since this set stops at Scars of Mirrodin, the first thing we did was we pulled up in Trader Tools the lists of cards that were in sets like Innistrad Block. and afterward, and especially Return to Ravnica and Innistrad, there's plenty of prime choice cards to grab up there that that are not currently going to be reprinted, and they have no danger. So we can go down our list. Adam, I'm sure you have some. I'll start chatting about some of mine.
Yeah.
Prime on my list is Geist of St. Traft.
Yeah, that's a great one.
I think Geist of, I was shocked this morning. Geist of St. Traft, we looked it up before we started casting. You can buy as many as you want for $13.25. Geist of St. Traft is not going to be reprinted. Geist of St. Traft is a 4 of a legend, which is wild. I mean, it's not like Thrun. It's not like you play one or two. You play a full 4 Geist. Geist is a very reasonable alternate sideboard card plan for blue-white-red control decks, for Twin, and for the Jeskai Ascendancy deck. And I love Geist. People like it. It's a very easy-to-understand card. It's fun to build around and fun to play. It puts games away quickly. I peg my... I blew it because I told you guys my best card early because I didn't want to get scooped. But Geist of St. Traft is my absolute number one. You got to buy this now promo card. And we saw, for example, you're asking yourself, why would you ever buy this card now when you have weeks and months to do? That's because Inquisition of Kozilek went from a $3 card to an $8 card as soon as people realized that it wasn't going to be in Modern Masters. So these cards jump up in value very quickly as soon as people know that they are safe. James, do you have cards that you recommend as a buy right now because they won't be in Modern Masters 2015?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'm looking at many of the same cards that a lot of people in MTG Finance are. Things like Snapcaster Mage, Restoration Angel, Liliana the Veil is almost certainly depressed below her natural level because her price dropped on the assumption she was going to be reprinted. The only caveat with her is whether she's going to find a home in Magic 2016 as a banner mythic, perhaps with alternate art. If she's not reprinted in 2016, then she's an amazing buy right now because, you know, when else would she be printed?
Certainly.
If that's the case, she gets at least a year, perhaps two or three, before, you know, for her to grow. And that means that down, you know, 2 years down the road without a reprint, she's a $100 plus card for sure.
Yeah, and you know, there's a price memory that she's at least $80. People remember paying $100 for that card. So the memory is there.
Yeah, and you can get her, you can get playsets online, you know, through the eBays and the TCGs of the world in the 200 to 220 range right now, which is fantastic.
While we're on the subject of Innistrad, I think that I don't know what they're called, like the Clifftop Retreats of the world.
Yeah, the Czech lands. I think that's what they call them, yeah.
Those might be a great option.
You know, we had pulled Sulphur Falls as one of those cards that is a Modern staple. I think it's the third most played card in Modern behind Scalding Tarn and Steam Vents.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like Sulphur Falls.
Yeah, Sulphur Falls right now, $7.17 TCG mid. That feels like a bargain to me.
That's a card that can easily hit $15 if there's no reprint.
And, you know, Cascade Bluffs is the example of that. Cascade Bluffs is nearly $20. I've seen it in store cases for $25. Sulphur Falls is honestly better than Cascade Bluffs. And I think that the time is right to spike Sulphur Falls.
Go ahead, Adam.
I was going to say on that subject, not to change the subject too much, what do you guys think of the Filterlands being reprinted?
Here's my thought on that, and this is the same thought I had back with Modern Masters. They would be great, but that occupies 10 rare slots, and I doubt that they would downgrade them down to uncommons. So I think that we're less likely to see those and more likely to see the World Wake Man lands. But I'm open to hearing other opinions on that.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, other cards I'm looking at is everything from RTR block that I now know is safe from a reprint in the foreseeable future. I'd love to get deeper on, you know, both foils and non-foils of Abrupt Decay. Supreme Verdict still looks drastically underpriced to me. It's not clear to me that Domri Rat has a future in any given format, but Voice of Resurgence is certainly a card I'd like to have more of in my portfolio.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that one of our Twitch followers mentioned, and we do read it, guys, is that Sulphur Falls is an amazing card against Choke and Boil, and both of those are seeing play now. Boil is an especially terrifying card that I'm seeing coming up about Scapeshift, but I never ever want to be boiled out. I can live with Choke, but I can never beat a Boil. Abrupt Decay is a good call. You know, there's Cavern of Souls is another one. Cavern of Souls has a very thin 18% spread between its buy and its sell price, meaning that that is a very popular card. It's nearly $17 now, so what am I thinking about that? I'm not going to be buying that, especially when I can get nearly 3 Sulphur Falls for that price. But I'm going to be trading for them. I'm going to be holding them. Cavern of Souls is not going to see a reprint. That makes me really happy. We're not going to see a core set come by, which means that a core set would be a great place to slot in Cavern of Souls. But I believe do we get one core set next year, guys, or do we not?
Yeah, we get Magic 2016 as our final core set ever. But I would actually be very surprised to see Cavern of Souls appear there, because the price of Cavern is not high enough, and it doesn't have a marquee deck to slide into that requires its price to come down. So I think Wizards is perfectly happy leaving that on the sidelines and waiting for Modern Masters 3 in like 2018 or something.
And we also have to remember that there are hybrid mana symbols in the next con set, so we could see the filter lands even crop up there.
Oh, that's a really good point.
If they want to be totally crazy about the color pie and decks playing fair mana bases, you can play a deck with tri-lands and filter lands, and you can go right back to the Lorwyn block insanity with playing Cloud Thresher, Cryptic Command, and Cruel Ultimatum in the same deck in subsequent turns. James, I have to return to something, though. You mentioned Supreme Verdict. I like Supreme Verdict a lot as a call. Supreme Verdict, I believe, is about $3 right now. If you do not have your set for Modern, pick it up right now if you play Modern, because this is a card that's going to edge on up 268 TCG player mid. Even the inflated stores prices I was in the other day was only $3. Supreme Verdict, great call for that. It is a very fine card against Delver, and it will continue to be good. It's very nice against the Maliripod decks. It's looking for a home a little bit right now, but I still like Supreme Verdict, and I really like that card at $3.
There's a few reasons I like this card. One is it is at the top of the power curve for the effect. If Damnation is a good card, this is a great card. It can't be countered. That's all you need to know. It's a 4-mana sweeper that can't be countered. And, you know, alongside Abrupt Decay, those are premium removal spells, premium control spells. The fact that it slots nicely into decks everywhere from casual to EDH and Commander, all the way back to Fringe play and Legacy, makes it a multi-format all-star, and it is definitely undervalued versus its long-term.
James, also on Supreme Verdict, we're looking at Supreme Verdict for older formats and EDH casual-type formats, and those are the formats where we're likely to see counterspells, where that clause is going to be important. And then from a financial side, Supreme Verdict is actually at an all-time low right now. Looking at the graph, it has never been lower in its history.
I've picked up 40 to 50 copies in about 15 or 20 foils in the last 2 months, and feel very confident with that purchase.
Guys, we had a question in Twitch right now. We had kind of moved past the whether you should sell it, but Noble Hierarch seems like a card that would be prime for a reprinting in Modern Masters 2. What are your thoughts?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's a get out now.
$60 card. I would not be holding $60 cards, praying that they did not come down. That's one of those cards where I feel like, you know, you sell them, the price may go down a little bit because there's more on the market, and then when people get the final spoiler, just be ready with your buy cart ready in TCG Player. You know, you can anticipate these things, and then once they figure out, like, is there a green card with an N in it in this certain print run between like numbers 117 and 119? No? Okay, well then rebuy your Noble Hierarch.
Yeah, I mean, Noble Hierarch has a lot of the same characteristics as Damnation. The key function there is that the older the card is, the more beyond the rarity of Mythic it actually is in real terms today. It's almost like when you're looking at like the price of a stock in 1972 versus today, you have to take into consideration the inflation that took place in the meantime and what it was in real dollars, in today dollars. And in today rarity, those cards are super mythics, Damnation and Noble Hierarch. But once they're reprinted, they're just regular rares. And a regular rare cannot be $50 or $60 when it's not the predominant card in Standard. It's just not possible. I don't even know if we've had a rare over $30.
Yeah, it's Yeah, I think Noble Hierarch is pretty unprecedented, and I can't imagine them not reprinting it. Yeah, it seems like that's a card they'll announce, and when they're ready for a lot of hype, they'll reveal that to the world, and then people are going to start going crazy.
Yeah, people got addicted to Deathrite Shaman, and then it was gone. They went to the next best thing. You know, they were trying to get high on methadone after they lost their Deathrite Shamans.
And the thing about Noble Hierarch is it's not going to get rarity shifted because it's a 4-of, it's not legendary, it doesn't have a specific thematic element, and it's good in draft. All of those things stays right there at rare.
Absolutely.
In which case, I want out.
Actually, and on that subject, it has Exalted, so it's possible we're going to be seeing other Exalted cards.
Yeah, for sure.
Come back.
Now, another card, we chatted about this briefly, but we'll return to it. Restoration Angel right now. It sells for only about half of what you can buy it for. You can buy it for $750. Restoration Angel, another card, James, you had mentioned, like, cards that are at the banner effect for their price. Restoration Angel, I know I've made this joke before, it feels like the white Cryptic Command, but I think I've started calling Cryptic Command the blue Restoration Angel. Restoration Angel just does a phenomenal job for its price. Angel Pod is ticking up because people are abandoning their Malira and they are picking up a couple Restoration Angels with their Siege Rhinos. $750 is a pretty fine price on that. Again, I don't know that I'm acquiring it at that, but I do know that I am holding on to it at that price. And Restoration Angel, we could easily see hit $15. That's one of those cards that people really remember. Hit $15, $20, $25. They remember it going up there. It feels like one of those cards, like, let me put it this way, like, paying $60 for Noble Hierarch feels awful. You know, it's like that card, it is a mana elf. It is a very good mana elf, but it just feels awful. Now, if you pay $15 for a Restoration Angel, it's like, yeah, I can see why this card is a $15 card. It's awesome.
All the Angel is waiting for is Treasure Cruise to get banned and the return of mid-range decks in Modern. Because things are too fast in Modern for drops right now, and so they can only be played as one or two ups when they're played at all. The same reason cards like Thrun, as good as it is against Burn, you're not seeing, you know, a Thrun deck stand up to the overwhelming tide of Delver. But Restoration Angel is also a card that gets better as they print more cards, because that blink effect is open-ended. You don't know what you're going to be blinking next year or the year after. So until it gets reprinted, it has all sorts of opportunity to find some new deck to find a home in that's not Bourbon Bot.
And here's a phenomenal example is Siege Rhino. You know, that is a card that made Restoration Angel even better, if you can believe it.
Yep. It's not the ideal partner because they're at the same casting cost, but you know, something that comes into play with a good effect that is a 2 or 3 casting cost, the same way that Restoration Angel interacts with Snapcaster Mage in white-red-blue decks. You know, that's the kind of interaction you're looking for to really push the card to the next level.
So we have we've chatted about a lot of great cards that we think are nice pickups. If you're just joining us right now, by the way, we will have this posted on our YouTube account in the next few days. You will be able to find it at Quiet Speculation's YouTube account. It's youtube.com/quietspeculation. Insiders for Quiet Speculation, you'll get access to this video several days before it goes public. If you missed any of this, you will be able to hear us again. Have no fear, you should click the follow icon so the next time you'll get an email about us being online and broadcasting. We try and do this every week so that you'll be able to jump right back on again and hear us right from the beginning. James, you had wanted to chat with us about, you had said that there were some major upsets and moves in Magic Online this week, and I gotta hear about that.
Yeah, so I mean, Magic Online is functioning as a much swingier market than paper Magic right now, specifically as pertains to standard cards, because a standard deck that wins SEG Open or does really well at Worlds doesn't really move the paper price. There's just too much paper product being open. But online, so much product was open that cards have been pushed to kind of their minimum levels in many cases. And so the advent of a deck like, say, Sidisi Whip, that deck is definitely in an ascendant cycle, both off and online, has pushed a bunch of cards up. And their highlighting of that deck by multiple players on camera at Worlds has resulted in, you know, CDC Brew Tyrant online has been up, has gone up 85% from about $3.20 to almost $7 in the last week. Doomwake Giant, also found in that deck, has gone up from $2.81 to $6.48, 77% upside. Some of the versions of that deck run Farika, God of Affliction, and that's gone up $2.72 to $8.09. You know, Soul of Innistrad up to $4.32. That's 170% in a week. You know, you're seeing a lot of big moves. We also saw, you know, Jeskai Ascendancy highlighted at Worlds with Sam Black's innovations with Fate Stitcher replacing the green mana producers to improve the mana consistency of that deck. And so we see Jeskai Ascendancy now go from somewhere under a dollar up to $2.18, which is 145% on the week. So people that are paying attention to these major tournaments need to be trying to capitalize on that knowledge as quickly as possible to reap some fairly major rewards in Magic Online trading.
Now, James, I want to jump in here too, because you have pointed this out. Magic Finance is no spring chicken. People know how to do this, and yet still, if you were paying attention to Worlds, maybe you were watching it during work or something, and you went ahead and you got those cards from a bot during your lunch break, you could have still made 200 to 300% profit on just any number of cards you talked about. And this is a known way to do it, and it still works, which is wild.
Here's the reality. You talk to any given Magic player at an F&M on a Friday night, and you discuss one of these topics, the movement of a card from point A to point B. They will, in general, agree and act as though they were on top of that. But the reality is they may have known it as a vague thing. That doesn't mean that they pushed chips on the table. It doesn't mean that they bought more than they needed for their deck. It doesn't mean that they are, you know, reading Quiet Speculation, participating in the forums, looking at the variety of other sites, and tracking all the relevant writers on Twitter. And it's the people that are that plugged in that are best positioned to capitalize quickly and decisively and really make some money.
Absolutely, and there's a lot of room on it. Adam, were you hitting anything on Magic Online this week while you were watching Worlds?
Yeah, I actually stayed up and watched pretty much the entire week of coverage. I stayed up late night. I was quick to move on Gifts Ungiven right when I saw the Ascendancy deck in action. And, you know, I made a fraction of a ticket on a bunch of those. That was a big one. Sidisi, someone actually in the forums on Quiet Speculation made a great post about Sidisi early last week, saying it was at around 3.3 ticks and poised to move, and I actually commented on that. And I didn't make a big move on it, but before long, it actually peaked over 8 tickets on the 4th.
Wow, that's astronomical. And are you guys, when you get these cards, I remember talking to Matthew Lewis, I think, was talking about how these cards have a very short life cycle. And James, I think you brought this up too, that sometimes it's only a 48-hour price peak. Are you guys flipping these as soon as they hit a price that you like?
Yeah, definitely. That's getting greedy on Magic Online is key. You need to be paying attention to your portfolio. You need to track your portfolio in a consistent, well-documented way. I use a Google spreadsheet online and the tools that are available through Quiet Speculation and some other sites to track what I'm holding. And I have trigger points that send me email notifications that let me know when it's time to make a move. But even just something as simple as, putting a note to yourself on your phone that says, you know, at 6 p.m. every day, take a look at these 5 cards, can really help you if you're going deep on something to move at the right time. Because, yeah, I mean, a lot of these cards that spike hard, guys like me are going to get out, and that's going to bring the price back down, because I'm going to dump 20 or 30 copies on the market at a time. Other people will be doing it at the same time. The bots are very sensitive to inventory levels in terms of these prices. So when demand is exceeding supply, that price will keep rising and keep rising and keep rising. They're not going to manually interfere with it. But as soon as the trend reverses and less copies are being purchased than are being dumped on them, it turns on a dime. And within, you know, a few hours, you can lose value.
Yeah,
so I have a general rule that if I see something up over 30%, and it's been less than 3 months, I just get out. And I've left money on the table many times, but a lot of the time, by the time a spike happens, you can actually get a lot more than 30% and just get out on that. And by using a rule like that, which is not a perfect rule, but is it has been a rule that has worked very well.
Yeah. James, that's some great advice.
You know, I remember Cat Williams had a bit about how Martha Stewart went to jail because somebody said, you have money in an account, and if you want that money to be there tomorrow, you should move it. And part of what finance is making sure you know what figurative money you have in figurative accounts and getting out of that as soon as you can to convert to something stable like tickets.
Yeah, I mean, when Sedisi went up, I was able to, within 20 seconds, bring up a Google spreadsheet, search Sedisi, find that I had paid $449 and get out at $779. And having those numbers at my fingertips in the time it took to, you know, flick the mouse a few times was the difference between, you know, making 10 or 20 bucks and missing it completely and going out to dinner.
You know, and somebody had mentioned on Twitch that the whip deck had an abysmal showing. And, you know, here's what I say about that is, like, yes, you're exactly right. That means that whip will not sustain a price. But we live in a postmodern truth optional world, and people want they want reality to match what they think it should be, so they see it doing well. They want to build the deck, and then, like, you want to get the cards now before they go up at the end of the tournament. So you get the cards cheaply now, and then maybe by the end of the tournament, your buddy's like, oh, I got to get this Sidisi Whip deck too. After day one or something like that, not realizing that it didn't have a great showing. And then, you know, people want to get in on it, they want to get it together, and there are also people who say, you know, I play Magic Online, and 20 bucks more doesn't matter to me, I want to play this deck now, I want to have a fun time, and, like, the money is less important to me than being able to play it now. So no, I don't think it matters that the deck doesn't have a good showing afterward. I could point to scores of cards that have had great on-camera time and then have nosedived, but they definitely does make them a little bit, you have to get rid of them much more quickly.
On that,
well, go ahead, Adam.
I was going to say, on that same subject, I think that Sidisi itself may have just been underpriced going into the weekend. I mean, it was a $3 mythic. And the other thing about the record is that Sidisi Whip was a full 25% of the standard field. So it beat up on itself a lot, which brought the win percentage down a little bit.
Yeah, and those were miserable mirror matches to watch, by the way.
Well, it is definitely something to keep in mind going forward, that Sidisi Whip is not necessarily the new number one top dog standard deck, because these people were metagaming against each other. These people were preparing to beat 23 other people, not to beat 800 person open field or a 3,300 person grand prix field.
It's like when Reed Duke brings Boggles to Worlds last year, figuring all I need to do is 4-0 this modern portion.
Exactly. It's a warped metagame. The win percentages don't matter as much as they do, you know, looking at week-to-week showings at SCG Opens and so forth. And specifically with Sidisi, you know, or that deck, a lot of those games were very tight. I mean, I watched most of those games. We weren't talking about it being abysmal in the sense that it got blown out repeatedly and looked like it was behind the metagame. It actually looked like it was metagame fairly well, but you got to look at what it was matching up against. And it did cannibalize itself a fair amount. All of that being said, I love Sidisi, even at existing prices, both in normal and foil, and I am gobbling up as many as I can get. Sidisi and Narset, which is completely unplayed but has a very bright future in casual formats. You know, you can get Narset's under $1.50 now. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I think Narset looks really cool.
Specify this is a video.
You know, you're talking about a potential commander general or just an awesome casual card that could, with the appearance of some kind of recursion or graveyard interaction, card being printed, suddenly become a premier deck, possibly in Modern, probably not in Legacy.
Now, but James, are you speaking about the paper copies of Narset, by the way, or just Magic Online only? Okay.
I mean, Magic Online will be some kind of exaggerated version of whatever price cycle happens in paper.
Also, I think that Magic Online tends to be a little bit less casual than competitive, so we're not necessarily going to see the cards match each other in price, because that paper casual market is more robust.
That's a good point.
Oh, yeah,
so,
definitely.
Adam, we are going to wrap up here. By the way, people listening, we love every last one of you who's watching us right now. It is not too late to share the link with your friends and invite them on for the final 5 or 10 minutes. And if they come on a little bit late, you can certainly encourage them to click follow, and they will get an email next time that we are doing this, which should be early next week. We wanted to wrap up. Adam, you had followed Worlds extensively. Well, let's talk about World, standard and modern. Just take your pick and let's go.
All right. So as far as modern goes, there are really two big options. There is the Fate Stitcher deck that was revealed, played by Josh Studdard, Layton and company, with Jeskai Ascendancy. And it's basically the new Jeskai Ascendancy combo deck that has completely gotten rid of the green cards for Fate Stitcher as a pseudo mana creature that can be cast for 4 mana or simply unearthed. And then it's supported by the usual Gitaxian Probe, Seer and Visions, Dig Through Time as a 4-of. And then instead of playing the acceleration, it gets to play more of a robust control game with Remand, Is It Charm, Lightning Bolt, Path to Exile, so it can remove things that get in its way. The red Eidolon would shut down the combo deck. But,
of the Great Revel.
Yeah, Great Revels. Whereas Lightning Bolt and Path to Exile make that pretty much a non-issue. Remand stops other combo decks and such. So that deck is definitely going to be a top modern deck going forward. Thought Scour and Fairy Conclave are cards to keep in mind that haven't been heavily played until now. And then another side of modern is the Rug decks, basically Rug Delver, that has Tarmogoyf along with the usual Treasure Cruise, Delver, Swift Spear, Shell. And
now, we did see Patrick Chapin run a flawless modern portion with just straight blue-red Delver, including Patrick Chapin all-star cards like Harvest Pyre.
Yeah, that was insane to see in action. Modern is kind of a brutal format. Patrick went with a really streamlined, consistent deck that allowed him to get through rounds and leverage his strengths as a player and as a metagamer. If you look at his list, he has 1 Electrolyze, 1 Is It Charm, 1 Mana Leap, 1 Remand, 1 Snapcaster, and then his sideboard has things like 1 Harvest Pyre, 1 Bonfire, 1 Electric Trickery, 1 Is It Static Caster, 1 Threads, 1 Magma Spray, 1 Negate.
Now, this is the philosophy that he espouses, that you have it when you need it.
Yeah.
But, there's a wisdom to the fact that there's a lot of overlap in those cards. Staticaster, Magma Spray, and Threads all work in different matchups, but you can bring in 2 of the 3 in a lot of common stuff. I wanted to tell people I have been testing the Jeskai Ascendancy deck with Fate Stitcher. My advice to you is that if you're doing it on Magic Online, that's the right way to do it because it does all the paperwork for you. But if you're doing it on paper, I have found it is much faster to take tally of things with pennies than with dice. So that is my play skill right here. I don't know if I've used dice in 10 years, but they work there. It is a deck that does not win before turn 4 most of the time. I am intrigued with the idea of a sideboard where you're bringing in Gifts Ungiven. Maybe not for the Unburial Rites stuff. I mean, that's kind of exciting, but you also get to do Value Gifts Ungiven, which I'm really into. You know, you get Dig Through Time, Treasure Cruise, and then some other stuff, and you're gonna wind up with a really nice grip.
Yeah, that's a good point. It also enables Delve pretty well.
Exactly.
You can get 3 cards with it.
Exactly, and I don't think that, they were saying, I think we broke the format. I don't think that's true at all. Simply through a lot of testing I've done in the last 2 to 3 days, I find, for example, that it has a very hard time winning against a deck like Splinter Twin. Even though the Twin combo was slower, Twin will straight up just win. And the Ascendancy deck, especially if it's having to fight through a couple counters, can get stalled out pretty badly. That said, it is a strong deck. I know that we saw a lot of motion on Fairy Conclave and Fate Stitcher especially. We had picked it with a Quiet Speculation Insider alert that our subscribers got, where we had said that Fate Stitcher and Foil was especially a good pick. So the people who subscribed to QS got that bump pretty quickly. Those cards left the internet. There are still I think that there's still stuff to scoop up too, and those are the kinds of cards you can pull out of draft bins and things like that.
Yeah, that alert was great, Doug.
Thank you.
I was able to pick up 5 of them for around 50 cents, and I actually sold 3 of them this morning for $10 each.
The foils?
Yeah.
Now, if you are listening and you are not comfortable with making a 20% or 20 times profit, I don't know that we can actually help you.
I mean, the interesting thing about Facehager is that the basic card was going for about a quarter or even less. It was basically, you know, a bulk card if there ever was one. And now, you know, it's north of $3. The foils only went up about 5%. I got in on a bunch while I was up overseas at about $1.75 to $2 on average, and I'm getting out now happily in the $8 to $10 range because it's time to get out. There's no further upside here. But I believe that this is one of those cases where nobody and some people actually really won hard on this, or just the dealers that had them sitting around in bulk boxes. You know, it's very unlikely that many of our listeners were able to capitalize on foil Facehager if they didn't have access to things like the Quiet Speculation email blast.
Yeah, and those are cards that they will take a while to get restocked on the internet, because doubtless there are lots of foil Facehagers. I dug one out of a box last night that I was going through, but they're not a card that a dealer pulls out and lists. So you get a huge advantage if you have an early in on a card, especially like a foil uncommon. I know, I mean, when I was making this call, Cerulean Wisps was the one that came to mind. It was previously spiked with the Ascendancy deck. It went up to a $10 foil, and I felt like that was the easy call. The other one was Fairy Conclave as a foil. Interestingly, the Fairy Conclave Urza's Legacy editions were still even only about $4. I think I'm the only one left on Earth that likes old frame foils, but you know, there were quite a few for you to choose from, and they all saw a nice, healthy gain. So there was a nice bump from the Ascendancy portion there.
I mean, one of the reasons I want to get out on something like Facehager is because it's from Shards of Alara, and that's the only set ever printed that was printed in foil, all foil booster packs.
Mm-hmm.
Not the regular booster packs, but they tried, hey, what happens if we put out a premium booster pack that everything's foil? So in theory, there are more foil Facehagers than there should otherwise be.
Yeah, there are, and I don't know how many of the all-foil boxes were cracked. You know, when people hear, like, oh, did you know that Facehager's a $10 foil? When they hear that at Friday Night Magic, they're going to start pulling them out of boxes later.
Yeah.
You know, when they go home, they're going to look for their Facehager. Like, oh, did you know that Facehager's like a $3 card? You should get it. People start looking for those, but there's a huge lag time on that. And I do love that those are a card where that, now that you know it, when you discover them in old boxes or collections or at a flea market or something like that, they're another card that you can snag. I don't know that there is much life left in Facehager being a $10 foil, Fairy Conclave for that matter as well, but I would be getting out now. I mean, there is an option that you can hold it for the Pro Tour and figure that we're going to see some awesome modern cards, but I just think that's being greedy. I think that's being tremendously greedy.
Yeah, exactly. If you can get this kind of return or trade it to somebody for, you know, some undervalued planeswalkers or something standard, I would be happy to do that.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, another reminder is like Forkbolt. Corbin Hosler called Forkbolt like a month ago on QS as a foil pickup, and then, you know, now it's a $20 to $25 foil. Or was, at least for a little while. And if you're tapped into a community, you can ride those things. And that sometimes you get really, really nice returns on foil uncommons, where if you were looking at the Ascendancy deck and looking only at the rares, you'd be saying, well, all these lands are expensive. These Ascendancies aren't going to move anyway, because they didn't move the last two times that Ascendancy was a deck, both in Standard and Modern. So there's no meat on this bone. But if you dig a little bit deeper, you can find some of that stuff.
I mean, I think one of my key points is, and I'm certainly in the minority here, so it's worth pointing that out, but I don't actually think that Jeskai Ascendancy is going to get banned this week. It's a scary card, it's an overpowered card, it's a breakable card, but it has not yet been broken.
Yeah, and it is a turn 4 combo. Whenever, I mean, I could see it getting taken out on the reason that it takes 10 minutes to play and to combo off, but other than that, it is a turn 4 combo. In fact, is a turn 2 kill deck. A deck like Splinter Twin is a turn 4 combo deck. If we're setting the bar at this kills on turn 4, then we have to ask, what else does it do that makes it such a pain in the butt?
Yeah.
And I think
and
that
the thing
the...
is that.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Ascendancy is a new deck archetype unto itself. And so it adds to the diversity of formats. And so until it starts dominating tables and not just putting a one of in the top eight, I don't see any reason to ban it. It does take a long time to go off, but that could have been said for many decks. I mean, white-blue control last year with Sphinx's Revelation took forever to play against. Those matches were going to the wire all the time.
And I'll say also, like, if you really hate playing against it, just scoop when they cast Dig for time, because that deck doesn't lose after cast Dig. Just go on to your next game if you hate playing against it.
Yeah, so I mean, you can get Jeskai Ascendancy foils in the $7 to $8 range right now. I love that. Because I think it's a card that has a bannable potential, and it's entirely possible it gets banned this winter, but I don't think it's highly possible it gets banned. And I would, because the card is good all the way back to Legacy, and because it gets better as more combo pieces like Fate Stitcher are either discovered in bulk boxes or are printed freshly, the card has so much potential, and it has life in casual and EDH as just a fun card that interacts in a bunch of different ways with your 100-card deck.
Yeah, also, this new blue-red-white deck showed that it's not necessarily pigeonholed. It's also being played right now in Standard with tokens as an anthem.
Exactly.
It's not necessarily the super narrow combo card that everyone thinks it is.
Adam, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of my side strategies with it was potentially boarding in Lingering Souls and just using Jeskai Ascendancy to combo post-board.
That's pretty good.
I mean, this is a versatile card, it's a powerful card, and I'm happy to be buying it at its lows.
And, you know, the other thing is that the Ascendancy deck in its current form, some decks you just kind of get that taste about how people will want to foil them out. Infect is one of those decks. Burn, not really as much, but Ascendancy just feels ripe for somebody wanting to turn it into a foil deck. Doesn't it feel that way, guys?
Yeah, maybe it says something about the people that play those decks.
Yeah, I think that you're right. You hit it right on the head.
You don't see many foil mono red decks.
No, and you don't see, you know, like a foil Jund list or junk. Those are pretty rare, but people do. Like, they foil out their green mono green Tron decks. There's just something about the psychographic of a person that plays Infect and that plays Tron is also the same kind of person that wants to play that Ascendancy deck.
I mean, I'll put it to you this way. When I was doing my deal for a Lotus at GP New Jersey, and I pulled a big part of that deal was a bunch of Japanese foils that I had purchased, things like Dig Through Time, Treasure Cruise, Monastery, Swift Spear, etc. I specifically pushed the foil Japanese Ascendancies off the table. Not only did my partner not value them very highly, but I got in on them at like 7, and I fully expect to be getting out on that within the next year in the $30 to $40 range.
That's excellent. Well, we are going to wrap up today. We have had a wonderful conversation. If you are coming in at the end of it, the best way to make sure that you don't miss the next one is to follow us here on Twitch. What happens when you follow us is that you get a friendly email from Twitch whenever we start broadcasting, so you'll be able to jump on. By the time you pull us up, we'll be in the swing of things and we'll be ready to roll. You'll be able to join us for a full hour. If you missed us, we have several other Finance Live lightning rounds that we have done. You can find them archived. They are on youtube.com/quietspeculation, and you can also find them, I believe, in our Quiet Speculation Twitch archive. So if you like this, give us a follow. Check out Quiet Speculation if it sounds interesting to you for a site to subscribe to. There is a 111% money back guarantee, which, yes, you heard me right, means that I will pay you if you try QS and you don't like it after a month. And until next week, I'm Doug Lynn.
I'm Adam Yurchik.
I'm James Chilcott.
And thank you for following us on the Magic Lightning Round.